We're joined now in studio by Jean Nell. She is the General Manager at NMG Personal Wealth. Welcome, Jean, and thank you so much for joining us on Classic FM.
Thank you, Marguerite. Thank you for having me, and good morning to all your listeners.
Thank you. And we're going to be speaking to Jean this morning about women and their finances. And so let's start off by saying, why? How are women different to men in terms of their insurance needs and their financial needs?
Well, I think there's a number of issues, but certainly what we've encountered within our client base is that women tend to still leave the planning to their husbands instead of taking care of it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look at what their retirement needs are until it's almost too late. So we encourage women to meet with us so that we can understand exactly where they are in their planning and what they need in terms of their own financial planning. And women often, you know, they only think that their husbands are going to die, and so they need to make sure that the husband has life cover so that they can take care of them and the kids. But they don't think about what happens if they had to die. How's the husband going to take care of the kids?
He needs
an au pair. He needs you know, somebody to take the kids around everywhere, to be there for on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
So women don't think about those kind of things. And often they don't think about, for example, breast cancer has become very prevalent, maybe because we've become more aware.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it
mm-hmm.
is. But certainly a lot of the claims are breast cancer. And so do they have that kind of cover in their portfolio? So we try and highlight those kind of issues for women when we meet with them, to make sure that they are sorted out.
Now, Jean, in your opinion, is there a big difference in the financial needs between married women and unmarried women?
Yes, it also depends on the age. There are a number of women these days that don't get married.
Mm-hmm.
So they are single women, and obviously for them, they are forced to take care of themselves and
yep.
they're forced to look to their retirement needs and to their own needs.
Yep.
So we tend to find that single women are more motivated to look after their financial planning.
Okay, so they do take care of
yes,
it in a more
yes.
Assertive way.
Yes, whereas the married woman tend to still leave it up to the husband because he's going to take care of them forever.
Okay, and talk to us a little bit about the difference between being married in community of property and being married out of community of property, especially where one of the partners, and let's say it is the woman, has been prudent with her savings up until she gets married, and has much more in her asset bank relative to the man. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, well, look, obviously, if they're going to get married in community of property, then that's a very lucky husband. Because it means he gets to share in her prudent financial planning and accumulating her assets. Obviously, if they get married out of community of property, then she's protecting what she has accumulated up to that
yes.
point in time.
Yes.
The norm these days is that people get married with accrual. So ANC,
mm-hmm.
anti-natural contract mm-hmm. with accrual, so that whatever they build during their lifetime together, they share 50-50.
Yes.
So that often is a better way to get married, because at least you are recognizing that each partner is contributing towards the marriage.
Right.
But married in community of property is often a problem as well if one partner is in business. Because remember that everything is now 50-50.
Mm.
And even in business, your business is owned 50% by your partner.
Mm.
So if you have other partners within your business, in the event of your death, your partner will now become their partner. And that person might not know anything about the business. These partners might not want that person in the business.
Mm.
So it's very important that you put documentation in place to make sure that the business is excluded from your 50-50 marital regime.
Okay, interesting. Let's talk about cultural nuances in South Africa when it comes to women and how much control they take over their own personal finances and the finances for the family.
Mm.
Let's talk about the differences in South African cultures.
Yeah. Look, we find that obviously with black women,
mm-hmm.
the way that they are brought up, they are a lot more independent than what the white women are. We think that it probably has to do with the fact that they have to be independent, that the father often works away from home a lot. And so the mother takes charge, and she makes sure that she instills that in her girls.
Mm.
So the black women generally are a lot more entrepreneurial,
mm-hmm.
and they take care of their financial planning because they know there's nobody that's going to look after them.
Right.
Whereas in the white culture, it's often still, you know, your husband will take care of you, darling. Don't worry too much about it.
Fascinating difference.
Yeah. So he will make sure that everything is there, and they, you know, and women don't think about the fact that when he's 47, he might have that midlife crisis and leave with a PA, you know, and then they're stuck with still in that mold that he took care of everything and I have nothing.
Right.
So, yeah, we've seen that. With a black woman, we also see in South Africa that of the entrepreneurial businesses, about 54% of them are run by black women and owned by black women. Because that's how they care for their family.
Yes.
You know, so they have to be the stronger person in the relationship.
Yes. Now, as independent as they are, and as assertive as they are when it comes to earning their own money, are they equipped to plan for the future? Do they know what they need for retirement? These women who have taken so much control of their finances because they are forced to, are they educated? Are they equipped with the information to know what they need to look after their family and look after themselves in retirement?
Look, certainly some of them are equipped to do that. And, you know, there's a lot of tools available today online. So if you're not making use of the services of a financial advisor, then obviously you can go and Google and you can find a tool that can help you to calculate how much you're going to need for retirement and how much your kids will need to be educated and that kind of thing. It's just a lot simpler and easier if you make use of the services of a financial advisor. And good financial advisors that, you know, that obviously subscribe to the six financial planning steps will ensure that you are getting the right advice. And so you understand where you need to start and where you need to end up. So, you know, that would be my advice to women, is rather get somebody to give you a second opinion. Your planning might be spot on, but it might not be. You know, just get somebody to look at it, check your calculations, make sure that you are on track, because it's not always wise to do it yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, let's take a little break from this. We're going to listen now to a traditional Zulu wedding song. It's entitled Sangena, which means we are coming in. It is performed here by the Stellenbosch Libertas Choir with Johan de Villiers conducting. We've got Jean Nell in the studio with us. She is speaking to us about the differences between women and men when it comes to financial planning. Jean, what do you suggest for women who are earning only a small salary compared to her partner, when it's not really enough to save from? Say the money she's earning is just enough to cover the basics, and she is relying on her husband to put away some money of her salary. But it is important to save whatever the family is earning. It is important to save a certain percentage of that. Can you talk to us a little bit about when a woman is earning so little?
Well, if a woman is earning that little, obviously, and it depends on the marital regime, but if they're married in a community of property, I would say that the husband needs to give some of his savings so that she can save it in her own name.
Okay.
For example, in a unit trust, and to build up some savings in the bank as well, so that she has access to money in the event of something happening to him. Because, you know, often women forget that if everything is in the husband's name, and I think, let me just touch on this joint bank account misnomer that everybody talks about.
Mm.
You know, so we have a joint bank account, so our salaries go into this joint account, and, you know, my husband can do what he needs to do, and I do what I need to do. The problem is that there is actually no such thing as a joint bank account. It's the husband's bank account, and she has signing powers on
it. Yes.
So it's really not joint at the end of the day.
Right.
So in the event of death, that account is frozen. So she's not going to have access to any of that money.
Mm.
So it's important that she takes some of the household savings and puts it into, for example, a unit trust, which is in her name, where she can go and withdraw some of that cash and, you know, have some money available. And also, you know, I always say that I haven't met a person ever in my life that doesn't have a talent. So she needs to use some of her talents to earn some extra money and squirrel that money away into a savings account and, you know, maybe the new tax-free savings accounts. So she's got her own money.
Or she potentially can make her own money.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. We just have to go to a quick ad break and then we'll be back. Okay, Jean, let's continue. Let's talk about what are the best assets for women to invest in for long-term growth? Is the best thing for her to look at property, shares, investment funds? What would you advise in general or specifically for women?
Well, look, I think not just for women, I think for everyone, you should have a balanced portfolio. So property, yes, has given us an exceptionally good run over the last few years. So if you're talking about listed properties, for example, it's really given us excellent returns. So property should always be part of your portfolio. Mm-hmm. And even if you own a home, you know, so if you're married and you have your home, mm-hmm. your family home, you should have a second property which will generate rental incomes for you, as long as you have a good tenant in there, obviously. You want to have unit trusts as well, which can be medium-term as well as long-term savings. And then, obviously, you need a retirement annuity, which gives you that tax break.
Okay.
You know, so that's part of your retirement strategy. And if the where women are working, they obviously have retirement funds. Mm-hmm. So there I would encourage them to contribute the maximum to make sure that they're accumulating money towards their retirement. But you need the medium-term and the long-term strategies to work for you, and you need a well-diversified portfolio.
Okay. And what about what about commercial property? Is it in terms of individuals owning commercial property? How viable is it, and what kind of is it a good investment to make into commercial property as opposed to residential property?
Well, when I talk commercial property, I talk about property unit trusts where they've got investments in commercial properties. So rather than you owning a commercial property directly, you know, where there could be a higher risk, you will own property unit trusts which invest in those commercial properties. So there you have a unit trust, which means that you're sharing your risk, and it means it's liquid. So you don't have to sell the property in order to access the money. Right. You can actually sell a portion of your unit trust and access some cash.
Right.
You know, so it's always a better. And then you have experts, you know, managing the properties for you.
Yes, who are in the know and who really know what to look out for.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, fascinating. Let's take a listen to a piece of music, and then we are going to go to our news headlines at 10:30. Jean is going to stay with us until 11 o'clock, so more questions and more discussions on women and finances and their financial planning. We're going to listen now to a piece of music which was composed by Leonard Bernstein, and it is the Symphonic Dancers. Let's continue our discussion with Jean now. Jean, let's talk about far into the future, wills and estates, and how. Let's talk about it specifically in terms of women. Women should have their own wills or joint wills with their husbands?
No, I think a woman should have her own will. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with a joint will. The only problem is that when the husband passes away, she has to redo the will in any event.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to have her own will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's critical is, especially if you have minor children, you know, say, for example, both partners or both of you are killed in a car accident.
Mm.
Your children need to be taken care of. So what's critically important is that a testamentary trust is set up in terms of the will, so that at least the children are taken care of. So you need to obviously have a discussion with a guardian that you want to appoint,
right.
So that they don't have this big surprise coming to them that they're going to have three kids that are under the ages of 10, you know, in the event of your death, that they now need to take care of.
Mm.
So they need to be cognizant of that fact, and they need to be prepared. So if that terrible tragedy happens, that at least they can take care of the children. So at least you know that you're setting up a testamentary trust and the children are going to be taken care of. And also you want insight into the other person's will, so that you know that, you know, if there is a surprise girlfriend popping up in the will,
wife.
That, or another wife, you know, that that at least you are aware of it.
Mm.
Because we actually had that happen with one of our clients that passed away. His wife didn't realize that there was another partner in the
the
in his life.
Yeah, in his life. And so, you know, all of a sudden there was this other person saying, well, I'm entitled to half of his stuff, you know. Mm. So it is a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you need to make sure that your will is set up properly, and preferably have two separate wills, so that it's your will that deals with your assets and his will that deals with his assets. And then it also gives you insight into where your shortfalls are.
Let's talk a little bit more about investing. Mm. And how much risk we should take when we do look at making investments. Does it change during your lifetime? Possibly higher risk investments when you are younger, mm. that reducing in your risk as you get older, to make sure as far as possible that those investments are come to fruition.
Yeah. Yeah, look, generally what you should be doing is, when you're young, and I would say young is even up to age 40,
mm.
you should be investing aggressively.
Okay.
Because you have a very long time horizon. You know, most people are only going to retire at age 65. And in fact, we're seeing that a lot of our clients are staying on up to age 70 these days.
Mm.
You know, because with medical interventions, people are living that much longer. Our clients, currently we're planning for our clients to live to age 90, because people are just living mm. longer and longer. Mm. And if you don't have that strategy where you invest very aggressively when you're young and grow your portfolios so that as you come closer to retirement, you become a little bit more moderate. So mm. you do slowly over time stop being that aggressive or less aggressive mm. with your investments. But you can never be out of the market. You know, so even when you have retired, you should have between 30% and 40% of your money invested in the stock market still.
Hmm.
Because otherwise you're just not going to get inflation beating returns. And that means that the income that you're going to generate after retirement is going to start diminishing.
Right.
So you need to have that investment strategy in place and make sure that you review your portfolio regularly. We encourage people to meet once a year with their financial advisor to make sure that everything's on track.
Hmm.
Because, you know, you often hear people say, but, you know, I took out this investment 5 years ago and it's done nothing.
Mm.
And then you say, well, did you look at it every year? You know, because if you did, then you would have seen that it was sort of going sideways.
Yes.
So you need to manage it regularly and look at it on a regular basis
mm.
to understand where you're going wrong. And then you also know, can you add to it? You know, should you be adding to it so that you can continue to grow your wealth?
Right. And I think that goes for your wills as well.
Mm.
Like, because the age of your children changes.
Yes.
So when your children are very young, you need mm. one type of will to make sure that they are looked after.
Yes.
But as they get older, they need less from you because yes. they become more and more independent. So that the same is true for
yes.
for wills and trusts. And
yeah, well, you know, what you should be doing is you should do holistic financial planning.
Mm.
So when you do financial planning, it's not just for a specific area. So you want to look at everything. You want to look at your risk and make sure that you still need all that cover. You might not need all of it, so
mm.
you can reduce it and start saving more towards your unit trust. You want to have your unit trust in there. You want to have your retirement fund savings in there. And you want to understand where your balance is,
mm.
you know, so that you have sufficient life cover, dread disease benefits, disability cover, all of those kind of things in place.
Mm.
And you have to review it regularly.
Mm.
And so your will is absolutely part of that.
And, for example, those dread disease benefits and policies,
mm.
if one signs one, if one takes out a dread disease policy in your 20s
mm.
and you just keep paying and keep paying and keep paying, does the actual policy get updated so that, as we've seen, there's a much bigger prominence of cancer over the last 20 years, for example, does the dread disease policy get updated, or is it up to the individual to go back to your financial planner and say, we need to include this and we need to include this?
Yeah, look, it doesn't. Most companies don't automatically update it.
Mm.
So what you bought in 1980
mm.
might only cover 16 eventualities, whereas now, today, the policies cover like 49
yes.
eventualities.
Yes.
So you kind of, when you have that annual meeting, your financial advisor must look at that and must understand what the benefits are and what needs to happen.
Mm.
And generally, you need to upgrade
mm.
so that it doesn't always cost you more money, but they add the additional benefits
mm.
in. So you need to make sure that your cover is always relevant.
Yes.
Because, you know, you get older and products products change all the time. Mm-hmm. And often you can re-cost the cover and save yourself a lot of money, which you can put towards savings. So you do need to look at your stuff every year.
Okay. Is there somewhere that women can go to if they were to start their financial planning now, whether they be 20, whether they be in their early 40s, whatever, a step-by-step guide? Could be very daunting for a woman who knows nothing about policies and equity, and how do they go about taking that first step so that they can make informed decisions?
Look, I suppose there are a lot of the websites, like the banking websites, the insurance websites, they all have tools where you can go and do a calculation to see how much risk benefits you would need to leave this kind of income for your beneficiaries, or how much you would need at retirement. But it really focuses on one part of your financial planning only. So I would always say to people, find yourself a good financial advisor. And remember, that financial advisor needs to be somebody that you're comfortable with, somebody that you can trust, somebody that you know has your interests at heart and not just their own pocket at the end of the day, because unfortunately there are still some policy peddlers out there and not financial advisors. So that you want to make sure that that person is looking after your interests.
Mm.
They will then take what you have already accumulated. They will ask you a whole bunch of questions about your situation. Are you married? Do you have kids? What are your earnings? You know, what are your savings? Look at your whole picture and then draw up a plan for you.
Mm.
Because, you know, much as when you're going on holiday, you kind of need a map to know where you're going. Otherwise, you get in the car and you go, where are we going? You know?
Yes.
So you want to have a financial plan that says, okay, in order for me to get there, I need to do X, Y, Z.
Mm.
You know? So then you have a blueprint that will help you to get through your life and to achieve all the goals that you've set yourself.
Mm.
And also in retirement, then to retire comfortably. You know, we still only have 6% of people in South Africa that retire at age 65 that's financially independent.
Mm.
So, you know, if you want to be one of those 6%, I'd encourage you to start your financial plan the minute that you start working.
Yes.
Because your first salary should be your starting point of when you start saving towards your life goals.
Of course. And that is the million-dollar question.
Mm.
How much do you need in retirement? How much money do you actually need to retire comfortably? And I know that that number is not a standard number for everybody.
No.
But how does that calculation work? What is a good benchmark in terms of saving to make sure that at retirement, and I think what financial advisors use is to continue the lifestyle that you currently enjoy.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Look, we say that there's different age groups, but when you start off saving at age 25 and you want to retire at age 65, you should be putting away 15% of your monthly salary in order to achieve that goal.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, the 15% needs to, every time you get an increase, it must be 15%. And if there's inflation at 6%, you need to increase it by 6%, because otherwise you're going to accumulate money that will give you your salary in today's terms. You know, so the 15% must be your new increased salary. It must keep up with inflation. And if you get a reasonable return on that, you generally will have enough to set up an income for yourself at retirement. But now if people leave it until they're 40, they already need to start saving about 30% of their salary in order to get there. You know, so the longer you delay, the worse the picture starts looking.
Yes.
So we have very sophisticated financial planning tools that we use in order to calculate each person's picture. But women in general, when they come to retirement, will need 15 times more than their husbands in order to retire, because they're going to live that much longer.
Wow.
Really? So, you know, most women end up spending their retirement in widowhood because their husbands have passed away.
Mm.
So you need to make sure that you are looking after yourself and not just after the partnership.
Mm. Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Let's talk quickly about the remuneration of financial advisors.
Mm.
I read in an article that it's important to know how your financial advisor is being remunerated.
Absolutely.
What are the possibilities? How is it, in what way can they be remunerated?
Okay, well, look, for us, it's very important that you're transparent.
Mm-hmm.
So financial advisors should always share that information with their clients. Their client must sign off on it. You know, this is an agreement. It's not a question of, listen, I'm just going to take 3% of your money, and, you know, whether you like it or not, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a negotiated thing. So there are ways, different ways. So obviously, depending on the product, some products have commission. So it's regulated by the Insurance Act.
Okay.
So there's regulated commission, but that's always also disclosed on any quotations that you have.
Okay.
Then advisors can charge fees.
Okay.
So also dependent on the different products, that's regulated. So some products you can charge up to 3%. Some products you can only charge 1.5%. Then there's also ongoing fees. So for, you know, if you look after a client's portfolio, you will want an annual fee off the assets that you're investing for them, because it's in your interest to make sure that those assets grow so that it can meet your client's needs. And obviously, as the assets grow, your income grows, because you're earning a percentage off of those assets. So, and other advisors actually just charge a rand amount for doing an analysis for you. So they will quote you a fee, and they'll charge you a rand amount, and they won't take commission. So it depends on everybody's circumstances and what would work for you as a client.
Okay.
Do you want to pay the fee up front, or would you rather it comes out of the insurance company's pocket or out of the investment on an annual basis?
Okay, interesting. Gina, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to a quick piece of music. It is Franz Schubert's string quartet in D minor. We were listening there to Franz Schubert's string quartet in D minor, the third movement performed there by the Amadeus string quartet. We've got Jean Nell still in the studio with us. It's almost time to wrap up our discussion with her. Just a couple of more topics to discuss. Jean, let's talk about debt and the debt that women get themselves into, and how to manage that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think we've seen too often that what happens with women is, especially if the mom, you know, and they have kids, that they end up having all the store cards in their names and the credit card and all of those things, because they are the ones that do the shopping, while hubby goes off and plays golf on a Saturday morning. You know, she has to go and buy clothes for the kids. So they forget that that debt is in their name, not in the husband's name.
In her name.
Yes, because they've opened the account. So, you know, they need to make sure that they get out of that debt, get the husband to contribute more towards the kitty, get rid of the debt, and, you know, really keep those cards only for absolute emergencies. But make sure that you rather have cash to go and shop, because you can also shop around and save yourself a lot of money. You know, store cards make money because they have to budget for bad debts.
Right.
So
right.
They will charge you a lot more than if you were shopping at the cheaper stores and buying cash. You know, so really try and get yourself out of debt, because you could be saving that money for your retirement, or saving for your next goal in life, start your own little business.
And the whole point about store cards, in my opinion, is if you have the store card and you are accumulating that debt, you can't actually afford to be shopping at those, buying those clothes.
Yeah.
And so one has to live within one's means, as an individual, as a family, as a partnership, in every, you know, in every relationship, or you know, it's fundamental to.
Because you're spending somebody else's money and not your own money.
At
the end of the day.
Yeah.
You're spending the bank's money, so you're spending the store's money, and they're going to come after you at some point.
And that's just going to cost you more money.
Absolutely.
Very important. Lastly, let's finish off with some quick tips for our listeners about financial planning.
Okay, so what women should be doing is, first of all, don't delegate your financial security.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take care of that yourself. Understand what you have and what you need. Okay, make sure your financial advisors are attuned to the needs of women, and that you understand each other. It's critically important that you trust that person and like the person, because you're going to go for the rest of your life, you're going to walk with that person. Okay, educate yourself, stay informed, stop reading the Skinner pages, read the financial pages in the newspapers, build an emergency fund, schedule your financial planning discussion in the same week as your medical checkup. And be aware of how your financial advisor is remunerated. I spoke a bit about that. So there's a difference between advice and commission-based selling, and transparency is one element to overcome that.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Jean. Thank you so much for coming into the studio with us. Thanks for your insight into women and our finances. And we'll be in touch.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Jean.